WPFW Washington.
Live from Ben's Next Door, 12th and U Streets Northwest, it's the Raucous Caucus with Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, and Terry D. Kester. It's seriously funny, and it begins right now.
To another edition of Caucus Caucus here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Garland Nixon, and I'm here with Mark Levine and
Terry Kester, the only calm, quiet, serene member of the Caucus Caucus tonight.
Obviously. Yeah, right. So Terry has become the voice of reason.
Reason and as quiet to the... and calm and peace. Obviously, we've all had a dozy.
Terry change. Is on drugs tonight.
Right. Well,
can we introduce our fourth?
Yes, yes. And I was going to say the only thing that's different is he's normally the voice of treason. to overthrow the government or something, but today it's reason.
You see a conflict between treason and reason?
You know, sometimes.
Sometimes it's reasonable not to be treasonable.
Okay, let's get to our guests here. Things are getting out of hand.
Please.
Tonight, we have with us Miss Janice Grenadier. From what part of Virginia?
City of Alexandria.
City of Alexandria.
I'm from Alexandria too.
I love Alexandria too.
So we've got the good and the bad of Alexandria here. I see.
The good, the bad. The
he's
ugly.
Not saying which is which. Which
you're
very, very. Oh, he's already just
bad.
Said.
Sorry about that, buddy.
Janice, we hope we get to hear you. We really.
Yeah, we do.
I'm sure we'll get my.
And tonight we're going to talk about Virginia politics. And corruption, which Terry and I don't know about you, Mark, but we don't feel that there is any corruption in politics anywhere whatsoever in the United States. That's our position, wouldn't you? Right, Terry?
I don't believe there's anything but corruption in the United States. In fact, what really disappoints me is Virginia, which pretends to be, this land of equality and justice and founder of the revolution, is turning into a fascist state. I mean, it really is, with a lot of guns.
Well,
right?
I think one of the worst things about...
Well, you need to speak right into the microphone.
Right.
Kind of make love to the microphone and say one of the...
They say that in this business.
In this business.
Mark,
love
for
it,
God's
okay.
sake. Okay, go ahead.
The corruption in Virginia is through the legal system also. I mean, the it's been rated 47th and 49th in two independent studies in every area of the judicial and the political system. Okay.
So we're talking
is that
about
better?
47th out of
50.
50. We have 50 states.
Okay, 50.
Yep.
I lose count sometimes.
Two independent studies.
Yeah, here's the thing that I understand about Virginia, and I've been a Virginia resident now for more than 10 years.
Well, ever since you got off parole, right?
Right. Ever since you got out.
You weren't supposed to talk about on the air, Terry. I told you that. That's it.
Issues.
I'm going into your drugs. That's it. We're just, no. Okay. No. No. But the thing is that. Virginia at the time was rated very highly in terms of business under Governor Warner, Governor Kaine. I think that a lot of Virginia's problems has to do with its new Republican legislature, specifically some very crazy bills, things about voting, things with regard to women, things with regard to guns. But Jan, I don't want to hear if Janice disagrees with me because I think this is a topic that she chose.
What do you think the root of this issue with the corruption in Virginia, in your opinion?
I think it's basically the old boys network. And if you look at the number one state is New Jersey. And then 47th state.
New Jersey's number one?
New Jersey is
You're
number
kidding
one in corruption.
Me.
I mean, it's the least amount of corruption.
What?
And that's
New Jersey's full of corruption.
The mafia all moved out.
Half their governors have been
removed
from office.
Because they have put into place laws and places where people can go and have their complaints heard. And they've taken care of the mafia there, basically.
That's
so
interesting, because of its history, New Jersey used to be one of the most corrupt states. Yeah. What you're saying is they've reformed themselves.
They've reformed themselves completely. We're now Virginia at 47th, and when you go to the governor and you talk to him, he's got his head under the rock. He says, we don't have those issues that New Jersey had.
No, in fact, his head is a rock. Not under a rock.
We have the old boys network.
How
Which
do you measure corruption?
Similar.
It's 47th. I can understand measuring test scores. I can understand measuring wealth. you can rank those things. How do you measure corruption?
Well, in the most recent one, they used public access to information, political financing, executive accountability, legislative accountability, judicial accountability, state budget process, which on all of those, Virginia got an F, along with lobbying disclosure, ethics enforcement agencies. They got an A on internal auditing because they take care of each other. they got a C on state civil management.
Do you have any other ranking of the who's below them? Do you have the rank of who? What country?
Tennessee.
My other home state. How is that?
You notice that it was a little higher.
I have to take that back. I'm not sure. Tennessee was 50 on the one where Virginia was rated 49th in from the Daily Beast website.
Okay. I got to tell you, Janice, I got to give you props. I asked you a tough question. I said, how do they possibly rank that? And boom, you're like, boom, 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 boom. I like that.
I'm prepared for you.
You got your facts.
Yeah, we'll see what happened, Martha. What actually happened in New Jersey, the people that were doing this survey, the mafia threatened to kill them. unless they put them a number one, they were all going to be sleeping with the fishes.
And you know, you should be impressed with the homework that Janice has done, because I know this is new to you guys, but this is called preparation.
I'm not familiar with that term.
Preparation.
I think, isn't that like a medication for preparation? Bombings in the wrong place?
Yeah, I've got some at home in my closet.
Keep on educating us, Jim. 47th. And it's, what is the organization that does the rating?
This one, the 47th on is...
It's the New Jersey Institute for Rate... No.
that one was the Daily Beast, and I have it here.
Okay.
Anyway, but let me ask you, because most of the things you cited had to do with accountability. And I'm curious, when you say accountability, that means knowing what's going on and being able to say, hey, guys, you're doing the wrong thing. Tell me more about that.
Well, what I have run into is I was in court, and the chief judge in Alexandria said to my face, you will never get a fair trial. We love your opponent, Judge Haddock. And from that point on, from 2007, I have been fighting for a fair trial.
Did he say that publicly on the record? It was taken down by a stenographer?
No, I can't imagine that. His administrative assistant, Diane Fisk, heard it. And I immediately filed for a trial by jury because of it, and I was denied. The situation is, I was a victim of my ex-husband and my ex-mother-in-law, Alona Grenadier.
So
it turned into a situation where I was fighting for a fair trial. And in trying to do that, I became a victim of Virginia political system. I became a situation where in order to get in front of the courts of justice, which Dave Albo, your friend.
Not my friend.
I assure you, he's not my friend.
Kim Cuccinelli and you are like, you guys are like brothers, aren't you, Mark?
No, not my friend. Okay. I assure you.
Well, in order to
I worked to, hard to defeat him. I just wasn't good enough.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. In order to get in front of the courts of justice, I had to go through my person, which was Patsy Tyser, who set me up with an ex-wife of a judge who said to me, you're no longer one of us.
Well,
you
here's the thing about it. Here's the question.
You need to go home and forget it.
That within the context of what you were dealing with, there were issues.
Right.
But that begs a larger question, because I don't know if you know it. I was in law enforcement for 27 years. I dealt
with court
a lot, and actually,
across the Potomac.
Well, okay, I was locked up, but technically it's law enforcement. Okay, pressing license plates. I was in law enforcement, and I worked with the AG's office. I was kind of a law enforcement official, and so I did a lot of work with judges. Dealing with different issues, and when you talk about a fair trial in Virginia, I don't think that there's any state that you go to where money and power does not play a significant role in how much justice you can get. You know, if someone has a lot of money, if someone has a lot of power, they have the ability to bring in a team of very powerful attorneys, such as my friend here, Mark. And the bottom line is this, that's going to affect the justice system in our country. And I don't know, you know, how to change it. But if you've got money and power and you can bring in a team of really powerful lawyers, you're going to get things in your direction.
But that's not the country we live in.
I'm afraid it is the country we live in.
But you do have to accept what Janice is pointing, 47th out of 50 states.
Oh, yeah.
You asked which organizations. This is from... a state integrity investigation,
yes.
which is a collaborative project of Center for Public Integrity, Global Integrity,
yeah.
and PRI, Public Radio International.
Radio? Well, if that's public radio, then
well,
there are
PRI.
Then,
I mean,
let me say this.
This is a very valid organization. Virginia is obviously worse than 46, 47,
and what I find interesting is the accountability issues. I just want, on the judicial issue, let me say this. I was a trial lawyer for a number of years in California, and I've seen the best in the courts. I've seen the worst in the courts.
Right.
And
in fact,
a
you
lot
were
of it,
the worst in the courts, if I remember.
You know
correctly.
What? You weren't supposed to admit that either, Garland. I, you know, how can I trust y'all with any secrets
trust?
Whatsoever?
This is the Rockers Clockers.
But no, the judges, what you find is, I guess, like most things in life, there's a, I mean, sure you find that in the police force. There's good cops and there's bad cops.
Yep.
Right.
There's good judges and they're bad judges. And there's a wide range. And some people think, and I've been dealing with this in the Supreme Court, they think that when someone puts on a black robe, suddenly they're full of integrity and
full of
honesty and they're not going to be bought and they're not going to be biased. Let me tell you something. I practice law in some very sophisticated, intelligent, fair judges. I also practice law in front of some real idiots and people. I'll tell you one story having been in California. I won't mention the judge. I was not in my hometown of L.A. at the time. I was up in another city. I won't say the name. But I was up there, and the first thing the judge did was thank my opposing counsel for the donation he'd given to the children's campaign or whatever that the judge was doing. He wanted to thank him for his very generous donation. And let's just say I wasn't surprised when I didn't win my motion that day.
I think Janice is saying something a little differently here, and I'm not sure, but so I want you to clarify. Well, what you're referring to is this good old boy network,
right?
Which is primarily white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, to be perfectly frank about it,
correct?
And has been in place.
It depends which boys there are, though.
Yeah,
I mean, in Washington D.C.,
but it has been
in
place. It has been
in
place for decades, if not centuries. The same network with the same people serving, the same people reelected. The same people being appointed.
Using
it's a vicious circle.
Right, and nepotism for Judge Haddock to get his son Haddock into the judge. It was written in the paper. He made comments on it.
Yep.
You look at
Strom Thurmond
instance,
got his 29-year-old son to be the Attorney General of South Carolina a couple years out of law school.
Right.
I'm more than a couple years of law school. How come I'm not Attorney General of Virginia?
Well, let's clarify something here for a moment. How are judges?
In fact, you may be Strom Thurmond's
well,
son.
The judges,
he's got so many of them out there. Well, you know, it's possible.
I don't have a black mother.
Yeah,
I can't.
You're right.
Be.
You can't. You have no relation.
Let's find out how judges are determined in Virginia, because I'm not sure I'm even clear on that. How are they determined?
My understanding of it, through what I've read on the Jerk Committee and everything, is that they're nominated. And they're basically
by the legislature.
Nominated. Well, yes, but they're nominated by their friends, basically.
A committee appointed by the legislature.
I mean, you look at what just recently happened with the gentleman in Virginia who had a different lifestyle.
Tracy Thorne.
I
actually know Tracy Thorne. Yeah. Tracy
and
Thorne,
you know,
is gay.
He's
a very highly respected military veteran and long-term prosecutor in Virginia for many years, had an impeccable record. And they said, well, you know, you're perfect on all counts, but you're gay. We can't have you
and
be
so
a judge.
And so the judges went ahead on their own and put him into place, which the judges in Alexandria have made statements where if we don't get who we want, we will put our own judges in place. And the problem we have is
well,
that
was this
they
a
all
good thing or a bad thing regarding Tracy?
Well, what happened ultimately with
thing.
What happened ultimately with Tracy?
Thing.
Was he put in? Was he
ultimately he was rejected by the legislature, but somehow they
the
did
judges,
get the judges got around
the
it.
The judges were on
and
a
weekend
retreat in West
Virginia,
one of the places, and they all voted in. They can all vote in.
I mean, I'm glad in his
control.
Case it was done.
It was the right thing to do
for him, but
right.
but maybe you're saying that, look
but
in most states that the governor appoints judges or they're elected by the people.
Well, no, they're elected in most states.
They're elected a lot of times.
It depends on
some judges. It depends whether
it's very rare for the legislature. To choose. Virginia has a very unusual system.
We have nobody accountable for anything. We have the Virginia State Bar. The ethics attorney for the Virginia State Bar contacted me outside of his job and said, I've been asked to look into your situation by a friend. Can you send me your information? Information.
Wait, we're trying to avoid a specific case and talk generally.
I'm
something
sorry.
About getting
I
sued
apologize.
And thrown, you know,
so,
off the air.
But the problem is we have the Virginia State Bar. We have the Jerk. They're all... The
what is
attorneys,
the Jerk?
The Jerk is a judicial inquiry
That's
committee.
The governor in actually in Virginia. They refer to him as the Jerk. Well, Mark and I refer to him as the Jerk.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that was in a movie, wasn't he?
Yeah, right.
Steve Martin or
yeah.
something? I don't remember.
But there's nobody that oversees them. They make one decision and that's it. And if they're friends with the judges, and they'll say right on the phone, he's my friend. I'm not going to take your complaint. You send the complaint in. The next day they send you a letter saying, no, sorry. Nice. And
I was told in Maryland in a different case that I thought that someone was acting unethically, a lawyer, and they said, everyone knows her. Don't dare file something, because in Maryland,
right,
you can do whatever you want, break all the ethics laws.
It's the same thing in Virginia.
My point is not obviously that it's a good thing. My point, I guess, is that it's not only in Virginia.
It's across this country.
It really is.
It's across this country. Know who it hurts more than anybody is women and children. Because women and children are the ones who get hurt by this. Because it's the children who need the money to be fed and to be taken care of. And the women are not getting the money from the
I would argue it hurts anyone without money.
I was about to say.
Yes,
who includes women and children, but also includes poor men.
The argument that I would make is this. And things like this, traditionally, things that hurt people in our society hurt the most vulnerable first.
Right.
Women, children, minorities, most vulnerable people in our society are the ones that usually get hurt the most by judicial and legal impropriety.
Let me break it down for you a bit from some of the information that Janice brought here. This is another survey, and Virginia ranked number 2 in the Virginia
is
the second most corrupt state. The second most corrupt state. And
but they're working on one.
Who's number one?
Tennessee.
Mark's home state.
I blame Aaron, who's sitting in the audience.
Are we
also
noticing
from
a pattern here that Mark is between the most?
Yeah. But
anyway.
So Bristol, which is in Tennessee and Virginia, is the most corrupt city.
Virginia ranked as follows. Number 14th in corruption. Number 9 in racketeering and extortion.
Wow.
Number 18 in forgery and counterfeiting. Number 9 in fraud. Number 5 in embezzlement.
How about gun running?
Virginia's neighboring states, District of Columbia, fared much better.
How about moonshine?
Maryland ranked 23rd overall.
It's funny because you hear a lot of the corruption that clearly exists in the D.C.
West
City
Virginia,
Council.
Virginia, believe it or not, came in 31. The district came in 36th.
But it's
Virginia is number 2 in the second most corrupt state in the union.
That's amazing.
And it's thought that in D.C. you get a fair shake in the court system than you do in Virginia.
You know what it is? In D.C. there's a lot of federal courts. D.C.'s courts got a strange thing because it's not a state. And I think that because of that, the D.C. prosecutors tend to be at a higher level of competence.
But you know what? We should
From the sound of things, there aren't – I mean, in Somalia, you get a fair shake in the legal system than you do in Virginia.
Maybe not Somalia.
Yeah, the pirates will give you a better – more legal rights than they do in Virginia.
But you know, we should all be outraged that there are two sets of rules, and the sets of rules for the good old boys is totally different for the sets of rules of the rest of the people in Virginia.
We should be outraged.
And not only that, they really have no problems even telling you that to your face. They've gotten to, you know, everyone thinks, okay, they're these Gentile men, they're
Southern gentlemen.
Southern gentlemen, but they are just as ruthless as the mafia. I mean, when you look at it and you think of the fact that we still don't know who killed Nancy Dunning in Alexandria and the sheriff's wife in Fairfax, committed suicide somehow, and you know, different things like that, that we have so many open issues.
Does it require legislation in Virginia?
It is going to require legislation, and it's
going to
require.
Because it's hard to change a culture.
You can count on Ken Cuccinelli to straighten that one out right now, Mark. I can tell you that.
I think if we could put together a board that is of the public and of all walks of the public, not just the elite who get elected to it because of who they know, but people who have everyday issues and can sit there and look at the complaints that come in against these judges and we have a system called the grand jury and a special grand jury. But you know what? They're blocking any citizens from getting in front of them in order to ask for a special grand jury.
Well, you see, one of the issues you have when you start talking about things like this, particularly when you talk about, you know, the judicial branch, is our system of checks and balances. The fact of the matter is,
the fact of the matter is that
in most states and in the United States, the constitutional protections that are supposed to protect us from these very things, unfortunately, also protect those who are in place from being held accountable for these very things.
Well, it's worse than
no,
that.
No, you lose immunity.
Let me give you a specific
immunity.
Example.
Oh, Terry's got more statistics.
I got more.
Reach for the sky. He's got statistics.
As an example, lobbyists in Virginia are required to register with the Secretary of the Commonwealth. Sounds good. And to disclose the identities of their employers. Sounds good. How much money they make. Sounds good. How much time they spend lobbying and how much they spend to entertain lawmakers in excess of $50. But the forms are never audited.
Right.
So they can say whatever they want and nobody checks the forms.
All zeros, buddy. They put all zeros.
So in other words,
zero, I made nothing.
Terry, are the forms, they're listed somewhere publicly?
Well, I don't know if they are or not. The state gives lobbyists a little guidance and filling them out.
Nope. So they basically go in a drawer.
Yeah.
If so I don't mistreat anybody.
Right.
Do they sign under penalty of perjury? Yeah.
You probably like go to a website to download the forms and you go there and you get that little 404 on your, we can't get this website.
That's crazy that they have these forms and nobody looks at them.
No, I mean, there's no accountability in Virginia all the way around. I mean, if you look at it carefully, I mean, it just is not that kind of a state. There is not a state where there are institutions in place to monitor or hold people accountable. I mean, well,
there
simply aren't in the judicial
anybody.
Or legislative system. It's just not set up.
Our governor says, this isn't my problem. I don't have any say over the judicial system in Virginia, which is true. Ken Cuccinelli says, I can't help you because you may sue us and I will be representing that person.
No, they're immune.
Even though Cuccinelli is suing everybody else.
Right.
Judges and lawyers and government employees are not immune if they break the law.
That's true.
If they go outside.
That's
all of them have. So they are not immune. You lose your judicial immunity if you can't be sued
based on your decision in a case.
It has to be a clear violation of the law.
It has to be something like you took a bribe and you have to prove it.
And it can't be an accusation that they broke the law.
Right.
They have to have been charged, prosecuted, and found guilty.
And it would help if you have videotape and three smoking guns.
So to say they broke the law, they have to have been found guilty of something where you can demonstrate that they broke the law.
If you can get a police officer or someone to investigate it, which they won't in the city of Alexandria.
They will not do it.
I found, and maybe because I am from Tennessee, I find the old boy.
Yeah, we trust you, pal.
I find the old boy
Virginia,
network
Tennessee connection.
Everywhere I go.
Aren't you a member of the old boy network?
You know,
I may be a boy, Terry, but I'm not old like you. So.
Yeah, you're old enough to be part of the old boy. Yeah.
I think that in any state,
too old to be a boy, too young to be old.
I think everywhere you have the far right, the far left, and then the center. And the gray area that you can accept and live with, and you can walk away and say, you know what? There's a little bit of if here. But when you go far right or you go far left, and there is no if, and it's deliberate and it's direct, it's wrong.
Let's announce where we are because you may not realize
where
we are at Ben's Next Door.
We're here every Tuesday in July. What normally happens, we're here for a whole month, and people grow and grow and grow. We get a big crowd the last Tuesday of the month, and then it diminishes again. So there are a lot of empty seats. We'd love to have you join us. 1211 U Street Northwest. There's still time to come down. We're going to take audience questions in the second half and let them join in and tangle with us and with Janice. Janice is someone who actually gave a nice donation to WPFW. And in return, we're dealing with her topic tonight, which is a good one, which is Virginia corruption. My only sadness, I guess, is that the things that you're talking about, and I'm not trying to get Virginia off the hook, trust me, I'm really not.
Yeah.
But that I see them. I've lived in three main states in my life, Tennessee, California, and Virginia. I've seen it in all three states.
Just curious, where's California rank, if you don't mind?
It's probably not as bad as Tennessee or Virginia. I saw better government in California.
California is further up there. I'm not exactly sure where, but it does not have the corruption.
And for the record, the most judges were not corrupt in California. Most times I think people got a fair trial, but sometimes they didn't. And when you see it, it's obvious. And you know what? Let's talk about your state, Maryland.
Good old Maryland.
I bet it's pretty low down there, Carl.
No, Maryland. It's
Maryland
and D.C. I think it's like 23.
Yeah,
really? Maryland did okay?
Yeah, right in the middle, buddy.
What about the judicial system?
That's included.
The law survey, Maryland is in the 20s or high.
All right.
Yes,
all right.
That's the bluest.
Fine. Just pick up Virginia. Fine.
Let's go back to Virginia.
You know,
crime is normal. Okay.
Part of the problem is that we face right here is in Northern Virginia, we have sort of a little bit of a different environment.
We're a blue island in a red storm.
Yeah, so we sort of don't recognize the good old boy network because we're not as directly connected to it, like within Fairfax County, et cetera. But as far as the state legislature and who controls what's really going on, It is the same good old boy network.
There's some weird bills that I do want to get a chance to talk to. It'll be probably in the second half of the hour, but I do want to talk about the voter ID bill, the bill that requires women to have an ultrasound before an abortion, and the bill that they all gall me, they all gall me equally. But the third one is the idea that they, after 20 years of successfully saying you can only buy one gun a month, now you can buy thousands of guns every day. Those three bills came through the Virginia legislature, I think, were the three most controversial. I don't know if there are any other bills you gentlemen want to mention, or Janice,
all
you want
them.
To mention.
Just, all if, of them. If it's a Virginia bill, then I'm against it. Most
Janice, I don't know if there's any other legislation that you want to discuss. We'll get to the second half of the hour. But,
okay, that'd be great. Thank you.
But is there any others that you have in mind, legislation-wise?
I think the worst one that went through was the abortion issue.
Was the abortion one.
And
well, let's talk about that one, because in that one, they required women to have an unnecessary medical procedure. Originally, and there's no other way to say this, it was transvaginal. They required the ultrasound to be stuck forcibly in a woman's vagina if she wanted to have an abortion. And, you know, the weird thing – and then she had to pay for it. You know, usually the rapist doesn't make you pay for being screwed. And here the government – I mean, it was a really, really shocking invasion of someone's person. I can't think of a more shocking one.
Talk about the good old boys network. Clearly, girls in the good old boys
network.
That's for sure.
You know, and it's a sad situation because – all these people are getting up and saying this is what's going to happen with a woman and her body, but yet nobody is getting up and taking care of the children that they want to see born. And so if you're not going to –
great point.
If
great
you're
point.
Not going to take care of children, then you know what? You have no right to judge.
Great point. I would like to see everyone who says they're pro-life on abortion, if you adopt two or three kids, you can say whatever you want. But if you refuse to adopt, you really can't try to argue that some other woman shouldn't have a child.
And I'll be honest with you. I am not, for my own self and for my children – pro-abortion.
That's fine, but that's what
I think it needs
means.
To be out there, and I think it needs to be safe until we have people stepping up to the plate
to take care
and
of all
taking
unwanted
care
children.
Of all of our children.
I agree with
and
you.
And allowing a play and having a safe place.
We got
all right. Well,
we got to
wrap
right
it up.
Now.
You're listening to Garland Nixon with
Mark Levine
and
Terry D. Kester
and our special guest
Janice.
And we'll be back in a second. WPFW 89.3 FM. Back in 1 minute.
Uh-huh. The Pacifica Foundation and WPFW Community Radio try to be as democratic as possible. Listener members and staff are entitled to vote for the local station board. We're hiring a local election supervisor to oversee this process. The election supervisor should be impartial, hardworking, detail-oriented, with both computer and people skills. This position will report to the National Election Supervisor, appointed by the Pacifica Foundation. More information, including how to apply, is at WPFW.org.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening and welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. My name is Garland Nixon, and once again I am here with
Mark Levine
and our special guest,
Janice Grenadier. Right,
the very, very, very wonderful, beautiful Janice Grenadier has joined us today. We're right here at Bench Next Door. We'll be here every Tuesday in July from 7 to 8 p.m. Come on down, join us, have some fun. We got a microphone here for you to ask questions, and we're going to have a blast. We got a little more time. If you're in the area, creep on in here with us and hang out for a little while. We are talking today about Virginia politics and corruption and all kinds of fun stuff like that. And if I'm not mistaken, Terry, a man whose very life is dedicated to facts and statistics.
Facts, information, justice, passion.
Well, didn't you explain who Janice is for those who just joined us?
Yes.
Janice is one of the people, one of the great people that supported WPFW, that supported the Raucous Caucus, and because of that generous support, was able to select a topic, which is corruption in Virginia public. In Virginia public or the government, and to join us on the air as a co-host.
We offered that as part of our pledge drive. We allow people to do that. And Janice stepped up to the plate. And I'm really glad she did because, you know, we mostly focus on national issues. But in state legislators across the country, in state judiciaries across the country, you know, states have more control over us sometimes than we think. We talk all the time about Obama and Romney and the Congress and the Supreme Court, and we forget that probably more than half, maybe even three quarters of the lives we lead are regulated not by the federal government, but by state governments. And Janice has been kind to bring us some really horrific stuff that we have to focus on my home state of
and
Virginia.
We love really horrific stuff here on the Raucous
Caucus. We do. We love horror.
But speaking of horrific stuff, Terry.
Yeah. Let me just say, another example here. So you understand, because most people don't understand this. I mean, this is a real question that I think Janice is trying to bring up. Most people in Virginia do not have any idea what their government really does. They may know who the politicians are, who the governor is, et cetera, but they don't really know what's going on in the process. One of the things I did observe is Virginia still has, like, the shortest sessions for Congress of practically any state.
Yeah, they barely meet. You know, they're like 2 months.
One Thursday a year.
That might be a good thing, because think of what they could do if they were
every
day.
That's true. In this case, you're right.
That group we got in there right now.
Let me give you an example of the shortcomings that are built into the law system, into the legislative system in Virginia. Lawmakers have exempted a key institution, the State Corporation Commission, which regulates businesses, utilities, financial institutions, insurance, and railroads from Virginia's Freedom of Information Act. The act also does not apply to so-called constitutional officers, such as sheriffs, and moreover, its 31,000 prison inmates also are forbidden to make requests under the Freedom of Information Act.
To me, the State Corporation Commission, that's
nice
amazing. They can give all these grants to businesses. Basically, bribery can be legal, and then they could say, sorry, you can't file a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request.
You can't find out what happened.
Why would we ever need to know what businesses are doing, you know, under the table? You know, we know they're shoving aces up their sleeves.
That's a very important thing, and one that I did not know, and something that definitely should
and
be
you know,
discussed.
When it just goes on and on. It really does. And when you get into the issues of lobbyists, again here, Janice has supplied us with more information. I mean, the lobbyists have extraordinary control, as always. And as you may not know, if you haven't been watching the national scene, is the lobbyists actually have been directing more and more energy and time and money in state legislation.
Yeah. They have been. Yeah. And it's interesting because people talk about the impact of Citizens United.
Yep.
Everybody talks about the presidential race, and it's true that this will probably be the first time in American history when the incumbent's going to raise less than the challenger.
But it won't be the first time he bought an election.
But someone once asked me whether I thought this was going to affect the national races, and I said, ironically, I think it will affect the presidential race the least of them all.
Look at Wisconsin.
Because most Americans have a view about Obama. They're learning to have a view about Romney. You ask any straight person in the United States, what's your view of the president? They'll probably have one. You ask them the view of their senator or their governor or their congressman or their state legislator, and the most common response will be, who? I don't know my state legislature.
You're right.
I don't know who my governor is. And so what we found through Citizens United is they can pack hundreds of millions of dollars in these state races, and they can have things like ALEC, the thing that that corporations use to control state legislatures, and they can do it all, the Legislative Exchange Council, American Legislative Exchange Council, and they can do it all under the table, because if you spend tons of money in a legislative race, people won't know, then they'll just see Mr. Smith, all these signs for Mr. Smith, I'm voting for Mr. Smith. Whereas if they do that for Obama or Romney, you already have an opinion. So the irony is that even though Republicans are always saying, bring things down to the local level, bring things down to the state level, most people don't know who their local and state government is, and that's why it can be influenced so much by money.
The other thing to keep in mind about local politics, this is very, very important. What's very important in local politics is who sits on what boards. And who
Amen.
Like she was saying, whether it's someone that can appoint a judge or appoint someone who's in charge of whatever, the Department of Public Works, if you are a corporation and you want to build something somewhere or you want a judge that's friendly towards whatever it is that you want, et cetera, what you can do is you can stack the deck of people who make the choices and do the appointments. And ultimately, kind of by proxy, you can get people sitting where you want them to sit. So you can manipulate the system with money by putting the right. The bottom line is, I give Mark a whole lot of money.
Thank you, Garland. I appreciate that.
I'm thinking about
I'll give you $1 billion.
That line?
Tell you what, you give me $1 billion of taxpayer money, and I will contribute $1 million to your campaign. Is it a deal?
That's a deal.
All right.
That's
okay. We have a deal. Let's go. It's win-win.
Mark and Garland
win-win.
Have just revealed their true personality. I am hurt. Deeply hurt.
Yeah. So, Janice, I don't know if you have a comment on what we're saying.
Don't hate the player, hate the game, Terry.
I don't believe this is just a Virginia problem.
No,
and
I
that's
agree.
Why I wanted to bring it up, because I think it's a national problem.
I agree.
And I think it's one that the public has to be active in. So many times people will want to be friends with you know, the guy who's popular and who has the most power, but he's the most corrupt. And it, that person's not going to stand up for someone who is in need.
There's
and
a long tradition in American so history. Go back to Tammany Hall. I mean, corrupt machines. It's all over the country. And I like the way you brought out that accountability is all about knowledge. It's all about not knowing what's going on, whether it's the State Corporation Commission or Freedom of Information Act request. I do believe the more you expose light on something, the cockroaches scurry away. And so I'm really glad that you're bringing
it up. It's a Terry's point. No, one second. And that is that Terry, the direction he went in was very, very important. And that is a lot of this comes back, unfortunately, to ignorant voters. A lot of this comes back to people who don't pay any attention to what's going on locally or nationally to policy. And so the first person that waves a sign in front of their face that's red, white, and blue, and they show a picture of this guy, look at him!
You know what? If you don't know who to vote for in an election, don't vote.
Yeah.
If you just see 12 signs for Mr. Smith and one sign for Ms. Jones, that's not a reason to vote for Mr. Smith.
Well, there's a picture of this guy, Mark, and he has a truck, and he has puppies in his picture.
Oh, puppies.
I mean, he's got puppies.
Well, I gotta vote for him if he has puppies, but that's the one exception.
Yeah. Well, you know what, it's very interesting. If you're out and you're sitting, especially in Washington, where everyone is so political and does have views, and if you're sitting next to someone and you take a bar napkin and ask them to write down 5 reasons they're voting for someone, you will find very few people can do that. They'll yell and they'll bark at you. They'll bark at you about why you shouldn't vote for someone, but they can't tell you why you should vote for the person that they're supporting.
Good point.
And that
I like
is
that.
Very important that you be able to take what someone else is saying and explain to them why you feel they would be better voting for someone else. If you're going to vote for someone, you need to be able to stick up for them and explain why.
Good
point.
The sad thing is that we've just
touched the surface on it. You know, the American system, such as it is, was sort of intended, and I say sort of intended, to create some kind of balance with a bottom-up and a top-down kind of government. I mean, you have top-down government, essentially, administratively. But it was sort of meant to be bottom-up from the communities, the counties, et cetera, like, you know, electing their state legislators.
That used to be more important in America.
Yeah, the state legislators then electing or selecting the delegates or selecting their representatives, et cetera. So there was supposed to be this community center of political activity that was to counter the top-down kind of government. And that has become totally reversed in this country now. People are totally unaware. The turnout in Virginia or any place else for the elections, for the primaries.
Well, they're on odd years of Virginia. That's the other thing that I strongly disagree with. And it's a long history in Virginia, but it's about time Virginia, only Virginia, New Jersey.
I think Maryland's odd years.
No,
Virginia and New Jersey are the only states in the United States that elect their governor and state legislatures on the odd years. And most people only go to the polls in a presidential year. Frankly, it's hard to get them in the midterms for the congressional year.
And why
but then
do
if you want to get them every single year in Virginia, I got to tell you, that's, there's a reason why turnout
is low. I don't think Maryland's governor is running right. I think it's 2014.
Well, that's an even number.
No, I thought you meant odd of the presidential.
No. Plenty of states have governors in the odd in the non-presidential even year. Virginia is weird. Virginia elects in 2013 and 2015 and 2017. It's really odd. What? And only Virginia and New Jersey do that. And what that means is that Virginia has an election every single November. Every November in Virginia, you can elect the president or Congress in the even years. You can elect the governor or the state legislature in the odd years, which means that even though I vote every single year in November, a lot of Virginians don't.
Yeah. No, and I think that's deliberate, because what that does is create confusion and apathy and disinterest, because people really don't know what the heck this election is for. Yep. Why are we electing everybody in Alexandria again? Didn't we just do that? But now we're also electing, you know, in the primaries, you know, for the state legislators. It's just a very confusing, and I think deliberately confusing, system, so that people don't have one time to vote. They have,
but according to the Virginia legislature, there are still too many voters. And one of the things that the Virginia legislature has done in this session is they've said citizens vote too much. Even if 15% vote, here's the problem for the Virginia legislature. Young people tend to vote for Democrats. Blacks and Latinos tend to vote for Democrats, and minorities tend to vote for Democrats. So rather than let the people vote for the legislatures have decided to choose the voters. And they have put in new voter ID laws that disenfranchise about 8 to 9% of the Virginia population. And they do it by saying you need to have a picture voter ID But instead of giving a picture of voter ID to every voter, which they don't do, a lot of very poor people don't drive, don't have, particularly in urban centers, don't have IDs. And when this was done in Pennsylvania, which, by the way, is has the largest rural population in the United States in terms of just numbers, not percentage, but numbers. There's a huge number of people in in Pennsylvania who live in rural areas. That was 9%, and the Speaker of the House in the state of Pennsylvania said, by disenfranchising 800,000 Pennsylvanians, or 9% of the population, we will ensure that Mitt Romney wins Pennsylvania this fall. And he said, who are we going to get? Minorities, young people, and poor people.
Right.
We're going to throw them off the rolls in the name of voter fraud. And then they went and they said, well, how many cases of impersonation voter fraud, which is the only kind you can prevent by this kind of stuff, have they had in Pennsylvania history? Anyone want to guess?
Three.
Less.
None.
Really.
None is the correct answer. None in the entire history of the state of Pennsylvania.
Reason, you know, if voters are hesitant, you know, I complain about Obama and the president probably as much or more than anybody. But if
more,
it
Terry, definitely more.
Definitely more, yeah.
But if it weren't for the Justice Department, and if it weren't for Eric Holder, and if it hadn't been this administration, you know, getting
there'd
Eric
be more
Holder,
of these laws.
They are challenging these laws all over the country, and I guarantee you, Mitt Romney would not challenge these laws, nor would his attorney general.
That's a good point. And when you take the right to vote, I'm sorry, I rarely call things un-American, but when you take away someone's right to vote, that is un-American.
It is.
No,
you should
kidding.
Be able to vote. I find that every American, if you are paying taxes, you should be allowed to vote in our country.
And you know what? If you're afraid people don't have a voter ID,
if you are an American citizen,
if you want to have people have a picture voter ID, it's very simple. They show up in the polls, take their picture right there, and hand them an ID.
Right.
And if they've committed fraud, you've got their picture.
But that's not the way Texas wants to do it.
No,
and if the case were that, if the fact was that their intentions were as their argument is.
Right.
But
if the goal is to prevent fraud, take
the
their pictures
because
at the polls. Let them register the day they show up. Take their pictures. If they commit fraud, you got their picture and their signature.
Yes.
But this isn't about fraud.
Because
it's about keeping people from voting.
If you are concerned about the integrity of the voting process, this is what they say.
It's easy
concerned.
To fix.
Okay, but there are two issues. You pick up one side of the stick, you pick up the other. Number one, one part of the voting process is making sure that people who shouldn't vote can't vote. The other side is
the more
making sure
side.
That everyone who can vote is able to vote.
People died for that.
But if you
right?
only address one side, that's the one that you are concerned with. They do not in any way address the, well, let me change that. They do address the other side
8%.
In ensuring, they address it in ensuring that many people who legally should be able to vote can't vote.
So here's how it works in Virginia. You go to vote and you don't have a voter ID because you live in Richmond or you live in Arlington. You live in a place with public transportation.
You're waterboarded. You get waterboarded?
No, you don't get waterboarded, not yet.
Okay.
Then what you do is you vote. They do allow you to vote provisionally, but they make you come back to the same center within 2 days. And you have to show up with some utility bill. How does a homeless person get a utility bill? Oh, maybe homeless people have no right to vote?
That's right. That's right.
I'm not sure. But rather than say that the burden of proof for a felony is on the police and the prosecutors to prove that someone committed fraud, no, the burden of proof is on you if you want to vote. I got to tell you, that reminds me of grandfather clauses and literacy tests and poll taxes and all of that.
Yep.
You know, to go back to the state of Virginia, one of the things I'd like to point out, which I think is a good way of seeing how the corruption is the Virginia State Bar. The Virginia State Bar is funded by the lawyer's escrow account's interest. So the larger firm you have, the more interest you have, so the more money the Virginia State Bar gets from you, so the least likely you are going to have your hands slapped. And if you look at the different cases that, you know, hands are slapped and you contact people, and the smaller lawyers who don't have the large firms behind them will tell you they felt like they were treated unfairly, but they have no choice.
That's interesting. I'm a California lawyer and I pay dues every year. It's dues.
Well, they
it's
do
interest.
Have dues, but they also take the interest off of that. Now, there's also a new wave where one of the attorneys in Alexandria has donated 10% of his estate. To go once he dies, to go to
wonder if he'll get a better
to go. The Virginia State Bar then has some volunteer stuff that they control the funds that go in there. And so they're trying to get lawyers to leave money to that. And
they told me in Maryland, there was a lawyer, and she was practicing before a judge, and she was the campaign leader, manager of, for that judge. She actually led the judge's campaign, and now she and raised money for the judge, and now she practices before that judge.
Are you inferring that that could somehow influence that judge?
I think it'd be hard to get a fair trial going up against that lawyer.
Yeah. Let me just give you a simple fact of America, in case you were unaware of it. And you know, my colleagues are young here. They weren't there during the
Revolutionary War,
the Second Revolution, when we actually tried to change things in this country.
The French Revolution.
Yep. I was arrested
the
in
Peloponnesian War.
I was arrested in Chicago during the demonstrations against Vietnam, and naturally, I did the natural thing I would do, having no money whatsoever. As I called, first off, I called the ACLU, and see if they could be of help. The ACLU said, very straightforward, "Hey, have you got any money?"
I blame Garland for that. Garland used to work on the ACLU.
Said no, and they said, "Then you can't afford trouble." That's it. I called the public.
Hold on. Garland used to work for the ACLU. I want to see if you will defend your
intention. I was on the case review committee. I could comment directly on that.
Terry Kessler's trouble. We're not helping him.
The point I'm making, in case you didn't realize it, and it's absolutely true, I called every single agency you could possibly call, public aid and everything else. There was one response. It's not just Chicago. It's the United States. If you haven't got money, don't get in trouble.
It's true.
If you haven't got money, don't get arrested. And that was the message I got. And believe me, it is true in this country.
There's no question. But let me just say this about the ACLU. One of the issues is, of course, with the ACLU, is they have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people every day saying, "Will you take my case?" So the ACLU, I was on the case review committee, and one of the things we had to do was look at the individual cases and see, you know, kind of a utilitarian perspective.
Say no to 99 for the one you took.
Yeah, because when you took a case, you had to direct a lot of your resources towards it. So we'd see a case and we say that has to do with housing and that's going to affect millions of people. That has to do with police searches and that's going to affect. So a lot of times cases such as Terry's, which clearly there were some issues there that should have been addressed, the ACLU, you know, does not have the resources
to address Terry Kessler's mental issues. That's what I said.
Yeah.
He had some issues.
Yeah, we were arrested for demonstrating. Yeah, against American principles.
No problem with that.
I was arrested for flying the American flag upside down, which is not illegal.
It is in Chicago.
I mean,
in 1968.
You know, some of you guys, you know, forgive me, you got to get out in the streets and find out what's really going on. It's all fine to sit here, meet esoteric and everything else. You got to get in the streets and really find out what life is like here as a criminal, as being arrested, being thrown in jail, found out how if you don't know how you're treated in a jail, you don't know squat about this country.
Well, believe me, Terry, as I said, law enforcement, and I watched court for years, and there's no one that knows any more clear than I that if you have money, then there's a different justice system
for you. If a kid is arrested for
a bag of marijuana, right, and he comes in with his dad,
right,
who's wealthy and has a wealthy lawyer, the judge ends up shaking his hands and hugging him. You know, said, "Oh, what a fine young man you are." Blah blah blah. If you walk in there and you don't have a father figure, you don't have any money, you don't, and you just walk in there, you kind of throw yourself at the mercy of the court. You end up in Guantanamo.
I mean, the reality
is... There's a reason why Ronald Reagan cut legal aid. It's the first thing he did as president.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is, people have to understand, there is not justice in this country. There really, truly isn't.
There's not equal justice.
There
is justice for corporations. There's justice for wealthy people.
Well,
I'm sure O.J. Simpson thinks he got justice.
Couldn't we consider corporations wealthy people?
I mean,
And
as a country, we need to step up to the plate, basically man up, and come up with a solution for it across the country. Put some kind of a board that's run by the people.
Well, I guarantee you,
that people can go to, and that it's going to take the issues
serious. We should have a place for complaints.
I guarantee you, it'll be begin to happen when enough people are arrested, enough people will be arrested as the economy continues to deteriorate and there's more and more homeless and there's more and more people without jobs. You know, people are going to get more and more desperate. There's going to be more and more demonstrations, more and more violence. It's going to happen. It's going to grow. Then lots of people get arrested. Then they find out what this country is really like. Then maybe we can get enough action to change something.
Go ahead, Janice.
I was up in New York when the protests were going. I went up the very first day when they
occupied Wall Street.
And I got to have a half-hour conversation with rent's just too goddamn high guy. That guy makes more sense. And, you know, it would be – it would really – when you sit one-on-one with him and have a conversation, he makes sense with what he's trying to do and trying to help. And the fact that we all across the country kind of laugh at them or make fun of it or whatever, but that's the kind of people we need to listen to and put onto some kind of a board that can, that has the, that definitely has the knowledge of how the people that do get in trouble, what they need.
What's interesting is as we have this conversation, the reality is if you look at what has happened lately, if you look at United Citizens United, if you look at Wisconsin, if you look at what's happening now where we got a guy running for president who's worth like $250 million and his platform is lowering taxes for the wealthy,
lowering taxes
and deregulating Wall Street. When we look at that, our country, as we have this brilliant discussion, our country is actually going in the exact opposite direction. Yeah,
he wants to lower taxes for his horse prancing, his horse ballet. I know people in our audience do they want to ask a question?
Come on up.
So you have to come on up to us. We have to share microphones here. One of the nice things about coming and visiting us at Ben's 1211 U Street every Tuesday is that if you're in the audience, you can actually come and ask a question on the air. This is one of our past guest hosts, Eric Ramey, and I know he has a question for us.
And I was going to suggest that for the rest of the show, we just take Terry's microphone and pass it around the audience.
Whether they're asking questions or not
is irrelevant. Let's just pass his mic around.
Let's hear what Eric has to say.
Hey,
Ramey.
Thanks, Janice. I just need to make a very quick correction, and I'm surprised Terry didn't get it because he's a statistician here. They said Janice is here because she made a substantial contribution to the station. Any contribution they get is substantial. I'd like you guys to comment on the process by which Virginia nominates their gubernatorial candidates. It was done once before by caucus, I believe, and then they experimented with direct process, the correct way by the voters, and they're contemplating going back now to the...
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. So the way it works is this, the parties, once they choose their candidate, there is an election to choose who's going to be governor. But how the parties choose their candidate is frankly open all across the United States and done by the parties. That's why in presidential elections, some are primaries, some are caucuses. In the state of Virginia, the Democratic choice, for the Democratic Party is always done by primary, at least as far as I know, for the governor's race, not always for the individual legislature races. But the Republican Party has said that sometimes they just give up the primary and they go and have caucus and they go into a, I don't know if it still has smoke in it, but the old smoke-filled rooms.
Yeah.
And they choose a candidate there with no input by the people. And the answer is that the parties themselves make that choice. So the Republicans could just say, the governor's son gets to be the next candidate. Yeah. And if that's the choice of the Republican Party, that's who's
going to be. For God's sake, we could get some nutcase like Bob McDonald.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah.
And the way it starts, and again, I've experienced this personally, if you try to run for office in a Democratic Party, the only party that I've tried, but I'm sure it's the same in the Republican Party, and if you contact the various officials, the first question you are asked is how much money
do you have. Yeah. Mother's mouth of politics.
Years ago, just for a state legislature contest, this is like decades ago, it was a minimum of $50,000 that you were personally going to put into the campaign. Today, that would be about $500,000 that you would personally put in the campaign before those supposed political parties that care about our system would even talk to you. That's a simple fact.
We're living
in a myth here. Our country is not run the way we think it is. And one of the main reasons that we don't understand this is we live under this illusion that it's not going to happen to me. It's not going to affect me.
Right.
I'm not going to wind up in jail. I'm not going to be penalized. I'm not going to be trapped in the system. And until people actually experience it, they do not realize how totally screwed up this nation and Virginia is.
You know, I thought about running for office once, and I talked to someone who had successfully run, national campaigns, Senate campaigns, et cetera, and they said, well, what you need to do is start off by making a list of 50 people who have a lot of money and would be willing to... donate your
campaign.
And I said, well, the first part is no problem. I know people have a lot of money, but they ain't giving me none to run for office.
One of the groups that's out there right now is Go Get Out of Our House, and it's out of Texas. It's a guy by the name of Tim Cox. And the idea behind it is you become a member of it, and they are not taking any contributions from any you know, big pharma or corporations. Everything is the $100 that people use to join. They're funding their campaigns, and they're doing it very slowly. They're going to have, I think it's a dozen people running for Congress this year. And they do. One of the things I'm not crazy about is they have a thing where you have to sign an agreement, you know, that if they elect you into there, that you stay with, you know, you don't turn into a candidate that's going to accept funding from big pharma and different places like that. But I think we are starting to see across America. The problem we have, too, is everybody has too much trash in their bucket. They don't want the world to know.
The other problem is this. What you're saying makes a lot of sense. But what we've seen is this. You know, if you play a particular sport and they say, you know, you can now
can hit below the belt.
Yep. And you say, well, the rules say I can hit below the belt and I'm not going to do it. Well, the other team's still going to hit below
the belt
and you're going to lose.
Right. So the reality Russ Feingold is the classic example.
I was about to mention Russ Feingold. There are a number of politicians and various organizations who said, darn it, we're going to do it right and we're going to do it the clean way. The problem is that our system isn't clean anymore. It's so dirty that when you do it that way, when you do it right, You lose.
Did you see that mayor today who lowered all of the whole their whole city's pay down to minimum wage?
Yes, Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Was it Scranton? Okay.
Scranton, Pennsylvania.
And
all police officers, all firemen, all teachers, all healthcare workers, all government employees have been lowered. Their salary has been lowered to minimum wage.
How about the mayor?
Because they have no money, and they are setting a precedent that you're going to see happen across the country.
Which means that they've just thrown most of the city into poverty because
that's exactly right.
The minimum wage in our country is absolute poverty.
Below poverty.
$5,000 left in their account after they paid everyone this week. So the idea was either you fire everybody or you lay them off or you give them something, keep them in the job.
Time that they raise taxes.
And they said that they would go ahead and once they got this all worked out and they got their budget worked out, they would raise the salaries back up. But for right now,
we'll see. It's
kind of like in our government here in D.C. They threatened to close it down. They close it for a few days. Do you miss anybody? I don't miss anybody.
In D.C.?
Yeah, you know, not D.C., but the
federal
government.
Well, then again, I'm not on Social Security either.
Government.
I think I might miss them if I didn't get my Social Security.
But imagine what's really happening there because you've got people who have, you know, if
you're food stamps.
You're probably an average sort of person. You've probably got a family. You might have a mortgage. You've probably got a mortgage. Now you're on minimum wage.
No.
What do you do? The economy of that city has been destroyed.
People have, you know, imagine someone that has, you know, four kids. Like I said, I was a cop. I knew people on law enforcement salary who had four or five kids whose wives didn't work or worked part-time, and they were doing the best they can to make it. You get dropped down to minimum wage with five kids, buddy. You're going to be eating oatmeal four meals.
I times about up, but I want to make sure that we thank Daniel, who's working very hard by our side.
Yay.
He's here every week at Ben's. You can say hello to Daniel when you come visit us on Tuesdays from 7 to 8. I want to thank David Kelly in the studio. I want to thank Brother Al, who's going to follow us afterwards and calm us down.
Do we have to thank Terry? Jazz.
And I specifically
Hooray.
Want to thank... Yeah. Janice Grenadier for bringing this very important topic to our consideration and having us talk about it.
We'll see you next Tuesday right here at Ben's Next Door, WPFW 89.3 FM, 7 p.m. Ben's Next Door, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl next Tuesday.
WPFW, Washington.